as human beings, we all have our own little habits that we do now and then. We have our routines, the things that we've been so used to doing that it's like it comes naturally to us. We wake up, make your bed, brush your teeth, put on your makeup, get dressed, whatever. All these routines that we follow. And a part of a lot of people's routines is this very simple idea of grabbing a cup of coffee. And so they'll do that almost mindlessly. Grab their coffee, go about their day, go to work, go to school, what have you. There's not a lot of thought that goes into most of this process until the actual event of the day is reached. Which is fascinating because if you really look at it and you really analyze every single step of that routine, there's something you can learn about the world and about society in every step. But the step that I want to focus the most on is the innocuous one that might have the most content in terms of the ethicality and the considerations for humanity within it. And that is the grabbing cup of coffee step. Because there's more than you know about the ethics of drinking coffee. Hello, and welcome to Jackie On, a podcast where I, Jackie, talk about my opinions on a bunch of different topics. This episode is Jackie On Coffee Ethics. Now, as I start most of my episodes off, I do kind of want to talk a little bit about, okay, how do we think about ethics? How do we think about coffee? And where do these two intersect? Now, most people understand ethics as this branch of philosophy about, you know, what's right and wrong and how we can lead good lives, so to speak. And I really want to focus more on the idea of evaluating and establishing standards of right and wrong that is more at the forefront of philosophy, as opposed to just, oh, what is right or wrong? Let's look more about how we consider correctness and wrongness. And I think that kind of framework really helps guide any kind of conversation about ethics, especially something about coffee ethics in which it might seem like there's both not enough and too much overlap. Because in reality, there's so many ways that these two topics connect to each other. Coffee and ethics have so much in common. And some of the main topics that we can even talk about is on gender equality, farmer compensation, human rights abuses, sustainability, so the supply chain, workers' rights, deforestation, climate change, biodiversity loss, deceptive marketing. If you look at the supply chain for a coffee company or any coffee bag, if you look at the history of how it got to where you are, that coffee, there is every single step of the way, there's probably at least one opportunity for there to be an ethics violation. And that's true of most industries, actually, which is quite fascinating, is anything where there is a massive supply chain of, okay, it came from this farm or this source, and it went to this factory and this worker, and then it went to this truck, and then it's moved to this facility, and then it's moved into this specific company that's selling it. All those steps, there's room for some kind of ethics violation or ethics issue within. And I think that's really prevalent specifically in the coffee industry just because its supply chain is so extensive. So let's get a little bit into it and start at the very beginning. Let's start with the farmers and planting coffee beans and harvesting them. So currently, especially within the coffee industry, it's kind of an environmental crisis. So the land suitable for growing coffee could shrink in half, essentially, because of a lot of the climate change that's been occurring. And essentially, the way to combat this, a lot of people's thoughts is, oh, let's just cut down forests and go into the forests. And so while we're seeing a shrinking of half this land, we're also seeing an encroachment upon forests and deforestation. And that is not a good thing, simply because of the potential biodiversity loss that is accompanied with that. So deforestation is bad for a host of reasons, but the first forefront one we're going to talk about is biodiversity loss. This is especially true with more intense farming techniques. Biodiversity is increasingly harmed compared to something like rustic coffee, which is essentially just randomly planting seeds in a forest. It's kind of like you take seeds and you like go crazy and go in a forest, and so it's more natural way of making coffee. It's like how it's unagricultural, so to speak, which is, I think, is quite fascinating. But regardless, so we have a loss of biodiversity because we're cutting down trees where animals and different plants need to survive. It also affects our oxygen supply. With biodiversity loss, we're essentially harming all the populations and species that live in these forests, and in general, simply because with intense farming techniques, the soil is being harmed, and that's affecting the planet. So it's almost worsening climate change, and then the loop restarts. And so on the ways of evaluating ethicality, if you are creating a bad situation and making it worse, I'd say it's pretty unethical. And then this also kind of applies a lot to sustainability, where you're using harmful chemicals in the soil, and how yield and crop growth are really so key in the coffee industry, and people will pretty much do anything they can to preserve proper yield and crop growth so that they can get a good amount of money for their coffee beans and their coffee harvest. And then I think the really big kicker to all of these issues so far in terms of the environmentalism, and this is a theme you're actually going to see throughout this entire talk, is this lack of transparency. And I mean both transparency in a general sense with consumers, but even greater than that, what I mean is a lack of transparency with the local communities. Farmers and those who are in these communities where this coffee is grown are often left out of the conversation of the environmental crisis, or even of a lot of these ethical issues. And I think that's in general what you see with a lot of these types of ethical violations, is that they don't necessarily look for real solutions. They look for shortcuts. And they don't want to involve people who have been in communities or understand communities. They kind of just want to get from point A to point B and do away with it. And that's where the real danger can lie in these particular situations. And next, I kind of want to talk about human rights abuses, specifically at farms and at these locations where coffee is being processed and produced. First of all, child labor is super rampant. In a 2012 study, about 99% of farmers reported that they witnessed minors working on coffee farms. Essentially, a ton of different farmers were asked, and almost all of them had seen some kind of young child working at a coffee farm. And within this, it has been reported that 507,000 children ages 7 through 14 have been found working at coffee farms. And when I say working, I don't necessarily mean, oh yeah, they're in a field for a couple hours a day helping around. No, they're hauling very heavy bags of coffee. They're doing very hard labored work that is not well suited for a child who is still growing and doesn't have full like bone and like muscle development. There's a lot of things here that I think people miss when it comes to child labor, that it's really crucial that these are not just, oh yeah, kids are helping, working out, helping their parents. No, this is like actual hard labor in the sun that these kids are having to endure. And then on top of that, there's a lot of slave and forced labor, usually as a result of debt bondage, in which someone owes money or something, and so then they're brought into this industry and into this work and given very, very little means, and their debt is kind of slowly repaid little by little. It's not a very good situation. And a lot of these abuses can actually be connected to like UTZ, the Rainforest Alliance, Fairtrade, Nestle, and Starbucks. And that is where a lot of these ethical issues come into play, is that these big companies are often the ones who are leading this change. And when it talks about, you know, the Rainforest Alliance and Fairtrade, while these companies really tried and were formed to create really good benefits, and I'll talk a little about them later, they do not always deliver on these and can accidentally lead to more forced labor simply because of lack of enforcement. And next, let's talk about that in 2019, there's over 300 workers in Brazil who were rescued from slave-like conditions. And that essentially means working for very little pay, enduring really, really harsh and difficult work and things along those lines. And so when we talk about something like that, about, okay, slave-like conditions, it's really bad. And to have 300 people rescued from those conditions is insane. It's a good thing, but unfortunately, the idea of these really awful conditions, this is not limited to just, oh yeah, it happened once in 2019 in Brazil. No, this is an ongoing issue that continues to affect farmers in these regions where coffee is typically grown. On top of that, about 1/7 of people who are living in extreme poverty work in the coffee industry. So that means that they make below a certain threshold every single day, and they're living off of that. So that might be living off of, you know, $100 for an entire year or something like that, or even less in most cases. And so of those people who live in extreme poverty, 1/7 of them work in the coffee industry, which really goes to show how there's not really good pay or compensation for workers and for farmers, and especially with the equality side that I mentioned earlier, a lot of the times women versus men are treated very differently as workers, and there's a lot of disparity specifically in their pay and in the kind of work that they're doing. And so this really is something that's important to highlight when it comes to specifically the coffee industry, and I think a lot of these industries that we take for granted, is the mass amount of human rights abuses. And so what's really important to think about is that before your coffee's even left the place it was grown, there's numerous ethical quandaries, ethical considerations that are being raised about treating people well, treating the planet well, and so on and so forth. And what's really interesting here is that at the end of the day, it's just a drop in the bucket of like all of the entire supply chain. And yet it's the most important part, obviously, where coffee's being grown and the one that's full of the most abuses. But there's not a lot of solutions going out there about it. Recently, specifically talking about the deforestation issues, the European Union deforestation regulation was going to be put into practice. However, European and German coffee federations have been alleged to lobby against the implementation of the bill, which has been delaying its implementation. Some of these members include like Illy Cafe, Nestle, Lavazza, Starbucks, the Rainforest Alliance, 4C, and so on. Essentially, the whole idea of the bill is that it would have geolocation data and traceability for coffee to ensure that it wasn't grown on deforested land. And that would be it. They just tax you a little bit of money if it's grown on deforested land. There's not a whole lot of accountability that can be put into place for this kind of thing. And the compliance cost would be about 0.03 or 0.07% of a company's entire revenue for that coffee. So it's really not that bad from like my perspective, but a lot of these coffee federations did not want this bill to pass. And I think it's so fascinating because you see that these people have essentially built their companies off of exploitation, willfully know that exploitation is happening and do not care to solve it. And I think that's the real ethical issue. It's not necessarily that, oh yeah, there are people who are in bad conditions. There are environmental problems. That is a given. That will happen no matter where you go, simply because things will arise and solutions will attempt to be made. What is your responsibility, these companies' responsibility, is to know how to stop it, how to see, okay, this is happening, let's prevent it from happening again, or let's prevent it from getting even bigger. And yet they do not do that because they profit off of these cases, which is really, really sad to see, especially for a lot of these farmers. And so with all of that considered, that's a lot of doom and gloom, a lot of sad things going on in the coffee industry, but what do you do about it? First of all, let's talk a little bit about different certifications that are out there that mark coffee, that it's more ethical versus less ethical, and so on. So, there is Bird Friendly, which is made by Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center, which says that it has to be 100% organic and shade-grown certification, ensuring that agroforests are preserved so migratory birds have a habitat. Essentially, they make sure that every single coffee that is being grown where there is shade from trees, and essentially allows birds that are migrating to rest in those trees and have an ecosystem and a forest to rely on. So a lot of it is, the bird-friendly title is a lot about making sure there's no deforestation and these forests are preserved. There's also Rainforest Alliance, which integrates biodiversity, conservation, community development, and improving the lives of farmers. Fairtrade is the one that's thrown around a lot. It's designed so that coffee farmers get a fair price for their work under ethical conditions. Essentially, the idea is to link farmers directly with importers to promote partnerships. And oftentimes, these farms are smaller scale co-ops. They can be larger, but they tend to be smaller scale in their partnerships. And it's more of a collaborative experience. At least that's the goal. It's also USDA Organic that ensures that farmers are using a system that produces food and supports biodiversity with a variety of organic farming methods. Many other certifications that I've talked about use organic as a backbone. So the first step is, okay, you have to be organic, and then you also have to not ply into deforestation, and boom, you're bird friendly. So things like that, where these kind of all work together in order to create a cohesive idea of, okay, what is right, what do we expect of people in the coffee industry, and so on. So let's talk a little bit about if that's enough. Is it enough to just buy coffee because it has certification on it that says that they're doing a good job? Not really. Certifications are not going to solve anything in the long term. Not all of these standards are equal, and new certifications are created to subvert standards. The issue is, a lot of the time, I could literally just create a certification. Like, Starbucks has their own ethical certification where basically it's them giving themselves a pat on the back for doing, I don't want to say nothing, but basically nothing to stop any inhumane treatment of people or the planet. And so a lot of the time, these certifications can water down true certifications and subvert a lot of these standards. Another problem that you see a lot, especially within some of the ones like the Rainforest Alliance and Fair Trade, is that auditing and making sure that like the ethics are actually being upheld is sporadic, and it doesn't always uncover actual abuses. There's been a lot of problems in their auditing process that makes it so that even something that says that it's fair trade or applies to the Rainforest Alliance might not actually apply in the same way that you think it would, simply because there was a process with the auditing or it wasn't often enough. And again, I'm going to go back to this transparency idea. A lot of workers and farmers don't really have a lot of input into these standards and implementation. Obviously, with fair trade, there's a little bit more of a partnership going on. However, a lot of these certifications do not necessarily reach out to workers or farmers and have their input as part of it, which I think is a shame, really, because that's where a lot of the people who are most impacted by the ethical issues, by the supply chain, are, is in the beginning, towards the workers and the farmers. Now, let's go over some real next steps that we can be following to make sure that we're actually doing something ethical and doing something that's important in the world. In terms of coffee, and in terms of ethics, and in terms of considering, okay, what can you do that might have an impact and might help people? First of all is traceability. Most small and local coffee shops use or source beans that should be traceable. If you look in a coffee bag, or if you ask them, can you find the region and the farm the beans are grown? Is there a working relationship between the coffee shop and the or the roaster and the place where the beans were grown? This is really important. If you're able to know where your beans come from, then it means that they want you to know where your beans come from. They're not hiding anything. There's nothing going on that's trying to be obscured. This also really goes to the idea of shopping local. A lot of local roasters will partner with farms directly or form co-ops that are independent of any large coffee network. And where you can, find shops that serve this specialty direct trade coffee, is what it's called. Instead of fair trade, it's direct trade, where you're going directly to relationships with these farmers and people who are involved very early on in the coffee supply chain and making sure that you are supporting them. Next is to just support employees in general. Get good at delineating whether something is for performance or not. Onyx, a widely known specialty coffee company, adds fees for employees while they still pay minimum wage with pretty bad treatment as of 2020. And this is a case where you have to really go, okay, so I'm paying an extra fee for employee benefit, and yet my money's not actually going to help the employees. That's kind of performative in terms of trying to look like you support your employees, but not actually. And so it was employees who mentioned this online, and so you really have to support employees and see if they're being treated well, because this is the other side of the supply chain, right? The industry, the retail side, where we also need to support people and workers. And next, money first. You might have heard people say you vote with your money, and that is true. You shouldn't give money or support organizations that perpetrate abuses, because by giving them money, you're supporting their actions and you're saying, yes, I'm okay with this. I'm willing to give you money to support it. And I think that's really crucial at the end of the day, because if you're, you know, stranded in the middle of nowhere, you need coffee and Starbucks is the only option, fine, whatever. If you can live with that ethical decision, you can live with it. But if you have a choice between a ton of local coffee shops and Starbucks, and you pick Starbucks because you think that they're gonna have better coffee, that's where your priorities are. You're choosing to vote with your money. You're choosing to say, okay, I care more about how this tastes than whether or not the place the beans are from was actually has workers that are treated ethically, has people who can sustain themselves for a living. And I think that's really important. Think about what you care about and let that reflect in how you spend your money. And that's true of most things in general, but especially true of the coffee industry and specifically for coffee ethics, which, kind of circling back to the beginning, I think is just so important because it is these things that we overlook in our day-to-day lives. These things that we take for granted of, yeah, I'm going to go down the street, get a cup of coffee and go to work, where there's actually so much that happened behind the scenes to get that cup of coffee to you. And there's so much damage that could have potentially happened as well that we need to work our best to circumvent if we can. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Jackie On. I'll catch you in the next one.